welcome back to the second hour of today's edition of Truth Jihad Radio, right here on We the People Radio Network, where we bring on the kind of guests that you're not too likely to hear on the National Public Radio airwaves or the Fox News radio airwaves or anything like that. You're not going to hear a whole lot of Chris Deppendorf there, and you're not going to hear a whole lot of the kind of discussion that we will be having here in just a few moments. I will be talking with Richard Curtis. Richard is a philosophy professor from the Seattle, Washington area. He is listed at patriotquestion911.com, that illustrious website. And Richard is a 9/11 truth supporter from a ways back. Very interesting guy. I've had some great email conversations with him, and one of our recent ones has turned around the subject of what's the best solution to the Israeli-Palestinian dispute. You know, that's always a good one to bring up at the dinner table if you need to get a conversation going. People always have heated opinions on this, and especially people who have any kind of stake in it, who've, you know, gotten involved in it somehow. You know, people who've been to Israel and really, you know, like it and identify with it always get very passionately attached to you know, maintaining Israel as a Jewish state and whatever. And then the, you know, people who are familiar with the Arab Islamic world, such as myself, often are very likely to have the exact opposite kind of approach and be very committed to the to justice for the Palestinian people who were ethnic cleansed from their own land in order to create this Jewish state. And those of us who have that perspective tend to advocate a one-state solution for everybody who lives there. We're not saying throw anybody into the ocean or, you know, or the sea or, you know, send anybody home. Just let everybody there vote on what kind of state they want. And the vote would clearly favor the one-state solution. No special interest group, no ethnicity, nobody gets any kind of preference or privilege, just a country with an equal protection clause like we have here in the USA, and, you know, like South Africa has since apartheid there was dismantled. So that's the one-state solution. The two-state solution is the more traditional one that the U.S. government has supposedly gotten behind since the Camp David Accords. But there hasn't been a whole lot of progress on that front. So anyway, Richard is a partisan of that two-state solution. I'm a partisan of the one-state solution. We'll have a conversation about that. And people will be able to call in and join that conversation here. The number for future reference, because I'm not going to bring it up right away, is area code 512-646-1984. That's 512-646-1984. Well, I believe we do have Richard on the line, so let's welcome him, a brave 9/11 truth speaker, philosophy professor, and all-around good guy. Welcome, Richard Curtis. How are you, Richard?
Salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I'm doing well, Kevin. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. So, yeah, what's new in your life?
My life. In Seattle here, we're contemplating reforming one of the groups around a more specific political program. And what I'm tossing around is the idea of an overtly anti-capitalist 9/11 group.
Oh, my libertarian friends are going to love that.
Well, yes, and admittedly, there's a wide gulf of disagreement in the 9/11 community on that kind of question. You know, what does it mean to be anti-imperial? And my position is that to be anti-imperial, you have to be anti-capitalist. But at the same time, it's of course vitally important that, as a truth movement, even if we advocate different approaches to a solution, I think it's important for us to get along well.
Well, I agree completely. I've been pulling my hair out trying to get along with the truth movement, but a small contingent of naysayers has been insisting on not getting along with me. So, you know, I don't know what to do with that. But I agree.
Set a bad example of not getting along too, and I think we have to overcome that and do whatever we can to get along, even when we're talking about things where we don't agree.
Indeed, and there may be some common ground there between you know, so-called left and right. The 9/11 truth left is what Barry Zwicker calls the conscious left. That is the left that's not deluded into thinking it's, you know, it's happy in some fool's paradise and there's just minor matters that need to be tinkered with. The conscious left knows just how bad it is. And also, I think that 9/11 truth right, you know, the libertarian people that I'm a little more associated with these days than I defected from the left, are also the conscious right. And you know, both, we should all be able to agree, for example, that allowing bankers a monopoly on the currency so they can create currency out of nothing at interest is a completely crazy way to run a country's currency system. And it's interesting, the libertarians seem to be more aware of that issue than most of the people on the left, even though normally the left is more skeptical of private power and the right is more skeptical of public power. But here we have this private cartel running the world's money supply, and it's mostly people on the so-called right who are aware of this.
Yeah, I think it's more a matter of sort of how people are just prioritizing the issue. Because certainly, you know, I wouldn't disagree with the way you're characterizing that. But it's more a matter that if you're coming at it from the position that capitalism itself is at issue, then the details of how it's managed, you know, are really inconsequential to that debate.
Yeah, Richard, so how would you define... How would you define capitalism? Because it, you know, the word capitalism can really apply to anything from relatively small scale producers like the, you know, organic farmers out in my neck of the woods, who often have fairly small scale enterprises. They have to capitalize those enterprises and try to turn a profit in order to survive. And in that system, of course, if you compare it to the Soviet system of collective agriculture, the so-called capitalist system of small producers, produced almost all the food for the Russians during that period. Clearly, it works better. But capitalism can also describe so-called monopoly capitalism of these gigantic cartels that are really swallowing up all competition at the global scale. So how do you see capitalism?
Well, I see it as part of a historical continuum in which you've picked out sort of a beginning and an end. But in general, capitalism would be the private ownership of economically productive property, so farms and factories primarily. And socialism is about the collective ownership of those economically productive properties. And it's true that there are some good models for how ownership can be collective, you know, a workers' collective that owns a factory, for example. And there are, you know, there are bad models where, you know, there are times when Soviet planning, I think, did a fairly good job of accomplishing what it was trying to accomplish. But as a long-term process, I think it showed that the planning was, you know, it couldn't be as dynamic as reality.
Right.
That's a horrible problem with reality. It always is escaping our plans.
Okay, well, you know, Richard, we already have a caller, and so let's go ahead and be nice to our callers and just, you know, bring them on up. First caller is Robert from Arizona.
Hello, Dr.
Hello, Robert. Hi.
I'm calling up because I want you to know that I want to play nice with everybody in the field, whether I agree with them or not. I think it's important that we state what we see and why we see what we see and allow others to do the same. And I don't care if it's 9/11 or politics or economic systems. It doesn't matter what it is. The world gets ahead a lot faster when people play nice. And it's amazing to me why so many people get so heated up about somebody who sees something different than them. I, for example, am one of these fellows who encouraged the producer of September Clues to come out with a high-definition version because the YouTube versions were impossible to see a low-grade video and not know what you were looking at because his claim that perhaps some of the images inserted in the television feeds that day were fake, you couldn't tell by looking at it at YouTube. And yet,
right,
we finally did get out a high-def version, which I threw up on a website and am sharing with the world for free. it's quite obvious that there are some serious problems with what we were fed that day by the mainstream media and, I suspect, the Pentagon.
Well, that's what some people seem to think. I still haven't convinced myself of that. I've looked at both sides of that and have ended up kind of agnostic, but seeing that some of the stuff in the original September clue definitely was off base, but perhaps some of it isn't. I don't know. Anyway, could you give a website where people can look at that, and then we'll get back to Richard.
Absolutely, Doctor. The website is network76.com. And it's a free download, September Clues. It's an open source, or I should say an AVI format that just about any computer can digest and regurgitate. And it's in so much higher definition that some of the images are quite obvious, at least in my opinion, that there's something grossly wrong. Airliners are not charcoal black in all forms of light and in all angles of turn and bank and so on. Normally you see a little different definition to something as it travels through the sky. And with the obvious studio quality and field quality network cameras that were in use that day, it's pretty obvious that there are some serious problems. When you see it in high def, I think you'll be shocked.
Okay, well, thanks for that recommendation, Robert. People want to see both sides of that issue. I think that's fine. I don't think we should be leading with that issue in our public relations campaign. But the other side of that, of course, the supposed debunking of September clues, you can find that at Eric Salter's website, which I believe is questionsquestions.net. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate the input.
Thank you.
Coming back to the first thing that Robert was saying, that I think what he's expressing there is, I'd call that a really basic democratic sensibility. Mm-hmm. That that's what it means to be to have a democratic society and indeed a democratic movement, is people have to be respectful of the fact that we don't all have the same opinions at the same time, and you have to talk and find ways to get along. That's, I think he hit the nail right on the head there.
Well, I appreciate that, but I've had a lot of problems with a certain group of people, a small but vociferous group of people in the 9/11 Truth Movement who don't seem to share that democratic sensibility. Their viewpoint would be that, for instance, I'm sure if they're listening now, which is perhaps unlikely, they would be screaming and yelling and saying, oh, no, Barrett allowed an evil no-planer to come on his show and plug a website. Barrett is a disinformation agent. These people think that, they have this Stalinist kind of mentality of, drum out the heretics and, burn the heretics and silence them. And anybody who even allows any heretic to get two words in edgewise is an evil heretic and disinformation agent themselves. I mean, there's a complete, mass psychosis, a real witch hunt kind of psychosis among a certain group of people in the movement, including, I'll name names. Arabesque is the leader of this, and there are, I won't name any more names, but there's one for you. People who are just out witch hunting and silencing people in a kind of McCarthyite, Stalinist way that's completely inimical to the democratic sensibility. So, Richard, what do we do to bring these people back to sanity?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it is difficult because there's always the possibility that there's some people who are causing trouble on purpose and other people who are causing trouble by accident. And how do you differentiate that? And clearly, if you can, that requires different sorts of interventions. And also the context, it matters. I mean, are you talking about what to do with the group meetings, or what to do in your context where you're trying to have a broad discussion across the whole nation via radio waves?
Right.
And I won't pretend to have the answer, unfortunately. But I think that if we can persist in setting a good example of respectfully listening to people and in groups, we've had trouble with this in Seattle ourselves, with where people just disagree so much with someone who's going to come out and speak that they don't then want to have anything to do with the group anymore. And I I think there are points where, you know, people have to act on their own principles and say, well, I think if the train has got so far off the track, then that I have to get off this train. Well, yeah, that's a matter of principle, and if you really feel that way, follow it. But other times, I just am not sure why it becomes so passionate to people sometimes that it's not okay to agree to disagree and to say, okay, you know, and in our case, this would Judy Wood was coming out. And,
right.
You know, her theory is very controversial. And, it, you know, kind of like you just said with the no plane stuff, you know.
Those are the two big controversial positions. Yeah.
Right, and it's not, and I agree with you, it's not the kind of thing we want to lead with when we're talking to people who are new, but that doesn't mean that, you know, we shouldn't talk about it amongst ourselves, or at least, and find ways to talk about it as long as people think that it's really valuable to talk about. So anyway, I guess that's, you know, sort of a long way around, but I think setting a good example is the short answer to your question.
Okay, well, we could always use a few more good examples, and Richard, I think you are one of them. Well, thanks. We'll be back for some more conversation, some democratic, open conversation where all viewpoints are entertained and the best ones are emphasized after the break. I'm Kevin Barrett. This is Truth Jihad Radio right here on We the People Radio Network. We shall return.
Great host, great topics, brief speech at its best. This is We the People Radio Network.
Truth Jihad Radio, where we are asking the 9/11 Truth Movement to come together. And hey, we've got somebody coming together right now. It is perhaps the most illustrious guest I've had in many a fortnight, the inimitable Alex from Texas. Come on in, Alex. How are you?
Hey, how do people know this is Alex Jones just because I said my name was Alex?
It's your voice.
Well, you know, that's what appeared on my caller screen there, Alex. So, you know, I had to give away your anonymity there pretty cheap.
Oh, no, I didn't.
How's it going?
They just immediately recognized me, I guess, from my voice. I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm driving along down the road here listening to you guys. And I don't really bring this up a lot on my own show because, in a way, I think it adds fuel to the fire. But I think, you know, so much has basically precipitated out that now we can look at it with some clarity and some hindsight. I mean, if I can just spend a minute or two on this, I'll add a few basic facts and hang up and get both of your response and take, because I want to, you know, hear what you think about that.
Take as many minutes as you want.
Well, thank you. If my cell phone starts cutting out, just tell me, because I'm driving to the hills here.
Okay.
It's real simple. We know the Pentagon for decades illegally and now publicly. The Army Times just announced we're going to have full armored brigades in the U.S. for Homeland Security, regular Army engaging in law enforcement. So we know that, just like in Michael Moore's movie Fahrenheit 9/11, that the group baking cookies once a week talking about peace, or people going and giving flyers to Halliburton employees in Houston, had Army intelligence infiltrate them, try to get them to commit crimes. This goes on. I mean, mainline churches are infiltrated. Everything is watched by the military-industrial complex. And so we know from the Kennedy assassination and what Jim Garrison went through and what he wrote about, what they do. And they had people infiltrate the movement to expose JFK's assassination by the shadow government. And they would act normal for a few years and then suddenly announce they were Martians, or suddenly announce that they fingerprinted their daughter every morning to make sure it was still her, and, you know, all this craziness. So there's standard stuff that goes on. So let's not deny that we have infiltrators and attackers. There are people with fake handles under my name, especially under your name, Kevin, running around all over the web saying racist things, horrible things, things about Jews, to try to put it on us. there's actually a YouTube investigation going on right now about that. But bottom line, this is going on. Now, that said, I noticed day one that the no-planers for Tower 1 and 2 and that the space beamers would viciously attack anyone who didn't immediately agree with them and scream and yell at them and scream and yell at me and try to bully me and others and then viciously try to discredit the key researchers that were getting things ready for peer review, which they did, the key researchers that were really on the trail that's now fleshed out with Kevin Ryan and all these other people and Stephen Jones and yourself. I mean, this is bombshell with the thermite, and it's just so incredibly on target. Just every step of the research continues, and it's really waking a lot of people up. So I noticed that not only did the bullies attack everybody 2 years ago and say, you've got to agree with us, at that critical point when the establishment finally decided 9/11 was a big threat to them, they then attacked all the key researchers savagely, and then national TV kept giving them attention, kept giving and saying, and so now when I do a national TV appearance or I go on a national radio show, they say, oh, you're the group that thinks space beams did it, or you're the group that thinks there were no planes. And I would talk to these no-planers, not their low-level, weak-minded people that follow them, but I would talk to the high-level, you know, the progenitors of it, and they would say, well, listen, I had family that was in New York, and they saw the first plane, or they saw the second plane, or I had family friends going back to college who saw it, and they'd say, shut up, liar, you're probably just a fan. And I'm like, well, no, I mean, there was hundreds of cameras that, you know, picked up at least the second plane. I mean, we can argue about where they painted up, like Northwood says, that the CIA switched planes. You know, that's all legitimate. But I said, and they're, you know, on and on and on and on and on, just viciously. So there's no credibility to that. There is credibility to a missile at the Pentagon, and the evidence really stacks up to that. And then another aircraft painted up like 77 flying over. People smelling the cordite. You know, all the film footage that has been released, sure enough, doesn't show the plane. So. They really are desperate to try to poison pill and discredit the movement. And they always say, well, free speech. Well, free speech doesn't mean that we don't criticize what they're saying. Free speech means we don't stop them from what they're saying. So watching this from the inside and being fooled by some of the people, you know, I mean, I built a lot of them up and gave them big platforms myself, and, you know, in what ways I could. And it's become very clear, and other operations, everything that can be done to make the 9/11 truth look clownish, then the progenitors of the no plane hypothesis go out and say that 9/11 truth bombed the Army, Navy, Marine Corps recruiting center in Times Square. They do everything they can, and we've also seen them coordinating with mainstream TV, and I've even seen the body language on the ground, and they come together to events, mainstream media with them. So there's no doubt this is a classic op. They've got a lot of mentally ill people and a lot of stragglers that, you know, follow them, and a lot of weak-minded people, and there's some personality conflict going on as well. But in closing, that's not their big salvo. That salvo failed. And I want to report that to everybody. I've been analyzing it in depth. It has failed. The good news is that that is falling apart. The bad news is there is a concerted operation for the last 4 or 5 months from hundreds of quarters, from Skeptics Magazine to you name it, to people in our own, quote, movement. We'll operate a few years and then activate. That's how an operation works. They try to build cred, and usually no more than 18 months, generally 12 months, and they activate. They're following a blueprint. And we have Army field manuals on this from other countries they've done it in. And most of them are former Army. It's not even hidden. Like, a lot of them are former PSYOPs. Like, oh, yeah, now I'm a truther. Oh, yeah, I'm PSYOPs. I was PSYOPs. I can help you. But then they activate. They start coordinating with screw loose change. And they activate, and they say, guess what? 9/11 Truth's dead. There's no numbers. Nobody cares. At a point when 9/11 Truth has grown to the point of polls worldwide, the majority believe the government's lying, a huge percentage of that majority believe it's a total inside job, with all these celebrities and German defense ministers and Italian presidents and Italian intelligence chiefs and best actress and governors and Willie Nelson and you know, and then other people just defecting from them and then saying, yeah, the government killed Kennedy. Folks that did 9/11 killed Kennedy. You know, I reported that 6 months before because my stuff was given to Bruce Willis by Rick Linkletter. He said it on my show, and people said it was a lie, but then Bruce Willis came out and said, no, it's true, but I have no further comments. The top comedian, best friends with Sarkozy in France. On and on and on. Daily bombshells where false flag, inside job is now becoming mainline accepted. And the same thing that Gandhi and others said. It goes through three stages. First, it's ignored. Then it's ridiculed and attacked. Then it's universally accepted. We are having victory, but the enemy are masters. Like Tokyo Rose, even as Japan was totally collapsing, saying, G.I., you've lost. G.I., you're dead. G.I., the war is over. G.I., we got Hitler. When he was imploding, we've got super weapons. It's over for you. No, you terrorists that carried out that. You're no planes. Your space beams have failed. Announcements of 9/11 truth failed. You didn't think we'd notice, operatives, those out there listening and monitoring, all activated 4 months ago?
Okay, Alex, that's pretty well put. Can you stay on and can I ask you a couple of quick questions after the break?
Sure.
All right. We're going to hold over Alex Jones. We blew his cover. Can't go back now. Alex from Texas. My guest is Richard Curtis, and he'll maybe ask a few questions, too, so stick around.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Okay, we're back. This is Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett. And today we've got a heavy lineup here. Richard Curtis, philosophy professor from Seattle. And Alex Jones has just called in from Texas to join the conversation. In case you missed it, he just summed up his view that there's a lot of COINTELPRO activity coming after 9/11 Truth. It's not winning, though. We're still plowing ahead. And, you know, Alex, I actually agree with a lot of what you said. I agree completely that the contingent at Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice, and especially Kevin Ryan and Steve Jones, too, those people have done terrific work. Their paradigm has really gotten somewhere as far as getting into the peer-reviewed journals and coming up with the kind of evidence that we can cite in the most important kinds of forums. But at the same time, I think where I would perhaps disagree a little bit is, you know, what do we do with this situation? Like, number one, I don't think that all these people, these no-planers and directed energy speculators, are psyops. There may be some, but I think that the psyops people in those camps, and perhaps in the other camp as well, are people who are basically just trying to start fights. So the best way to avoid having the movement split up and broken up by people trying to start fights is rather than to try to completely censor the heretics or shut them out or, you know, or scream at them and email, get in flame wars with them and fight them all the time. The best way to resist this is a sort of a jiu-jitsu strategy of getting out of the way. And to me, that means, like, give everybody their say, but emphasize the good ideas. And that way, you're not feeding the fire by going after them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, my phone's breaking up. Can you hear me good?
Yeah, we can.
Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really even commenting on what you were saying earlier about not fighting with them and blocking them out. It's just if I have a C-SPAN event, say, again, I'm not going to stick a no-planer or a space beamer who's running around attacking. I mean, you have to remember, a lot of these people have viciously attacked other nice researchers with more legitimate research. So you know, they attacked first. That's why people said, well, we're ostracizing you, because they were vicious bullies. So that's the bottom line. But the point is, they're being ignored. They have failed. I mean, when it comes out on Keith Olbermann and New Yorker magazine that Dick Cheney wanted to, you know, sigh at Hirsch, that Dick Cheney wanted to, just a few months ago, paint up Navy boats like Iranian patrol boats and have them attack U.S. destroyers in the Strait of Hormuz, I mean, when it comes out, I mean, the Chicago Tribune 6 months ago admitting that Israel premeditatedly attacked the USS Liberty, that whole debate's over. All those debunkers, all those books, all those TV specials, it's that the NSA's declassified, everything we said was true, everything the admirals I interviewed, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, now dead, died in 2004, Admiral Moore, Admiral Geist, I interviewed them all. I interviewed dozens of these people, you know, with LBJ on the phone saying, I want that goddamn ship going to the bottom. It's all come out that Israel and our disgusting black ops government attacked their own ship. And our military and police better get that through their heads. Everything we said's true. It's over. We've won. See, the enemy's putting out the hoax that we've lost, and that's failing too. But the point is, I don't want it to have any effect. 9/11 truth has gone from the fringe to the mainstream to universal acceptance. And I want to let your guests have the time here. I just want to declare the victory has happened. Now let's go wake up the dumbbell sheep that still don't know what's going on. You know, it's free on Google Video. Truth rising. What the 9/11 truth movement really is. Who we've confronted, all the incredible people that have come out, Fabled Enemies I just put out with Jason Burmes. It's free on the web. Get the DVD at Infowars.com. Keep fighting. Keep spreading the word. And we're going to take their tool of government-sponsored terrorism away from them. I'm having Georgia sneak attack Russian-controlled territories, international territories, and then try to hoax the Americans that Russia really snuck attack. That failed. This stuff used to work. It doesn't work anymore. Because of people like you, Kevin Barrett, because of people like your guest, and I'm going to let you guys get back to what you're doing, but I salute you, and just God bless you, and God bless the great folks at WTPRN that have kept it together, and I'm glad to see it's back on the right track and really exploding and moving forward, and you guys have a good one. Okay, Kevin?
All right. Well, thanks, Alex. I appreciate it. Keep up the great work yourself. You're the guy who really got this all going, and my hat's off to you.
Well, by the way, I want to get you, both of you, on the show. I think I've told my producer a few times to get you on, but I tell him so much he forgets. But, Kevin, if my producer doesn't call you Monday or Tuesday, please contact us because I want to get you on. Take care, my friend.
Sounds good. Okay, take care, Alex. Bye-bye. All right, that's the inimitable Alex Jones, the man who was spending the summer of 2001 begging people to call up the government and ask them not to do it. He's been on top of this thing before it even happened, and it took me 2 years to figure it out. I have enormous respect for him. Richard, do you have any response to what Alex was saying?
Well, I think that he's making a very important point that all, you know, everybody in the movement needs to be informed on COINTELPRO. I mean, that they need to know about the history there and how those things work. And, you know, I think the first thing he said, and then he kind of got away from it onto other topics, but it is chillingly significant that the military is stationing troops on North American soil for the first time. You know, and with the economy melting down, it seems to indicate that they may be much more panicked than they're letting on, and when they panic, you know, of course, bad things can happen. So it makes for a very dangerous time.
Indeed. And, you know, the economic collapse has been the excuse for tyranny and for martial law situations and for war. It's the easiest way for the government to get out of being blamed for a bad economy is to blame somebody else over across the ocean that speaks a different language, has a different skin color, go out and kill them. That's all their fault. I mean, that's what we're facing here is the possibility that they're going to try to, you know, flee from this situation into a wider war that would make us all, you know, forget the way they mismanaged the economy. So, Richard, again, I think, you know, originally we were going to talk about solutions to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and we have precisely, 15 minutes of talk time left to solve that problem. You know, we may have to put that one off for another date because we have a long list of callers. Should we bring in a caller?
Well, we have to.
Okay.
Go to the phone.
It is our duty to take calls. And, you know, Robert's going to have to be last in line because he already had a say. So first we're going to bring on Jeffrey from Kentucky. Hello, Jeffrey.
How you doing, sir? I called in last week when you had that one German on about the metaphysics and everything, about the head injury and all that.
Yeah, that was interesting stuff, huh? So, what's up?
When I got out of the military in 2005, I got a hold of the 9/11 Truth Movement, and I saw what was going on, and I drove on with it. But I think a lot of people that have their doubts about where the 9/11 Truth Movement is going in the future, are quite concerned about, you know, the military station itself in America and the economy collapsing, and how 9/11 Truth can actually blend in those aspects and bring forth the proper change with the sense of urgency that we see happening in the world the way it's unfolding today. And I think where that's where a lot of these people in the truth movement as a whole have seen and have come to the conclusion that 9/11 may have stalled out some, 9/11 truth movement may have stalled out some, or maybe they're too specialized in the 9/11 and maybe we should branch out a little bit. And I believe that if truth in this truth movement is a free market system and everybody put their opinion and their truth and their facts out there, and whatever holds the weight will rise up, like Drew's, Kevin Barrett, like Seema Jones and Kevin Ryan. Their stuff holds up to scrutiny upon levels above what us normal researchers would put ourselves through. And I do believe that if we all just get the facts and information out there, the proper information and the right facts would soak the top like cream. You know what I mean?
But we're working on it, and I think it's happening. And I think the peer review publications and the recent work of especially I think Kevin Ryan is really a great kind of unsung hero whose research has been as important as anybody's. So yeah, those guys are really doing great work. What do you think, Richard?
Well, I think that we have to keep in mind too. There's a presidential election going on, and that just attracts a lot of attention. So I think that if people are feeling or thinking or saying that the truth movement is stalling, that the same thing is true about all kinds of movements and people who are trying to get different messages out, that this thing takes over. Yeah. And there will be more space for conversation, and I think part of it, at least the people that I'm spending time with, is that they're very excited about Obama, and that seems to trump involvement in 9/11 truth issues, and I think there's a problem with that. But
there's a huge problem with that, and there will be more space for conversation on that after the break. This is Truth GM
Radio.
There we go. Yep, I'm Kevin Barrett, and we are talking with Richard Curtis, philosophy professor. We'll be right back.
Giving the power back to the people. You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
This is Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett. Today I'm talking with philosophy professor Richard Curtis. We had a little call in there from Alex Jones. And regardless of what you think of what Alex had to say, and I think there's some truth to it, I think that the fact that he's calling in here and giving We the People a boost and stuff, that's all good. That's a sign that, he and others really, really want to unite everybody that's doing productive work to keep the conversation positive as much as possible. And I guess Robert from Arizona, who apparently was probably the trigger that got Alex to call in, which, hey, thank you, Robert. I'm eternally grateful for that. I love having Alex on my show. We'll give Robert a chance to respond. He is on the line. So, hey, hi, Robert. How's it going?
I'm doing great, Dr. Barrett. I'd like to just add a couple little things. Number one, I got in communication with the producer of September Clues, the guy that put it together, and he's from Europe, and he claims to be a retired video editor. He now has a band and does some other things. He does not communicate very well in English. And what I think a lot of people glommed onto was that he claimed that the images we saw on the video, and let's face it, all video that we watch are nothing more than images. He claims that the images are not genuine. He doesn't say that there are no airframes.
Right, right. And that is an important distinction. I'm a little skeptical about this guy, though, just because, I'm skeptical of all anonymous people whose work, especially if their work causes division and strife. For instance, the person that calls him or herself Arabesque, assuming there is a person behind that moniker, seems to me to be such a person. And, you know, where's the human being behind this name? You know, somebody who comes in, does very slick writing, and then suddenly starts going on the attack against effective activists who use their real names. And likewise, September Clues was anonymous, and that was kind of a red flag for me. So this person really should go ahead and go public, in my opinion, if they want to be taken seriously.
He is public. His name, he has a band, and the band and his name are public. He has an email address. It is not Arabesque. The fellow,
I'm sure it's not.
The fellow communicates under the name of Simon Schack. He does not communicate well in English. But when I really queried him carefully, I discovered that there was a Murphy's Law principle of communication going on here, that the right hand didn't understand what the left hand was talking about. And the most important thing of September Clues is that 50% of the movie covers video anomalies that have nothing to do with aircraft. It has to do with stolen audio tracks going from network feeds to private videos that were later released. All kinds of problems like the Verrazano Bridge in the background, 7.3 miles away, traveling fast enough, including the landmass under it, behind the trade towers, fast enough across the background to get a speeding ticket.
Right. Well, Robert, I have seen that film, and I would like to see more people with expertise in video take a hard look at it and look at its claims. I think that all of the network video from 9/11 absolutely must be released. And Ace Baker, the video fakery guy, whose work, you know, I've never gone out and endorsed him or anything, but he has that petition to have the networks release all of their video, and I think that's an important issue. They should release that video. It has nothing to do with these particular claims. But again, the important thing is we need more experts looking hard and critically at this. When I look at these claims, I look at Eric Salter's rebuttals at questionsquestions.net. I'm not convinced that this is stuff that I would take to the bank or lead with. Richard wanted to get in a word. Robert, can we let Richard get in a word? Because he has a take on this. Richard?
Well, sort of. I have a take on the discussion. I certainly don't have a take on the issue. Because, it is astounding when you sort of sort through it, you know, how many different kinds of questions people ask about the story, the official story, and the ways that they ask those questions. I mean, it just goes on and on. And sometimes the controversy itself gets to be overwhelming. But, my point is, you know, just to come back to this bit about respectful disagreements, that, you know, I also have a great deal of respect for what Alex Jones has done and continues to do to get the word out on all of this. But I have to confess, there are times when the words that he chooses give me a little bit of chill, because I think sometimes people might take offense where it's not the intent, where I don't think his intent is to cause offense, but sometimes I think it might come off that way, and where I think it's sort of, you know, I just want to come back to the point of we need to keep our heads up about what's going on with you know, government intervention in the movement and what the clues are to watch out for that. And that, you know, again, everyone needs to read the history of COINTELPRO to know what's going on and to pay attention for that. And then, you know, as a counter to that, we have to find ways to talk about these complicated issues where we're disagreeing. And also, you know, and I think for a lot of people, the hard part is, well, what is something that you want to expose the public to, or have the movement associated with in a public forum? So, you know, like this example from a recent event here in Seattle, you know, so we have Judy Wood out, and that ended up creating divisions in the group.
Because now, how recent is this, Richard?
This is just a few months ago.
Oh, okay.
I was living in Los Angeles for the first half of the year, so I wasn't here for it, which, I don't know, hopefully puts me in kind of a middle position because I didn't have a stake in that fight as it was happening. But I think that, you know, people, you know, one of the people who left the Seattle group is someone who I think is acting on very good principle, and he just thought it was really such a bad idea that we have a public forum in which this idea, in which Judy's, what's a good generic way of putting it? You know, her
directed energy weapon.
Directed energy beam theory. Yeah, there we go. Directed energy beam theory. That, you know, he just thought that presenting that was just was going to be damaging to the movement. And that's, you know, that of course becomes the nut that, you know, we really are fighting over here is should the controversy be something that we put front and center when we're having public events or not? Now, you know, in our case, I would sort of defend the decision to bring Judy out in that we are very often attracting an inside crowd, and that's kind of a problem with our events. So we need to find ways. We need to reach a broader audience than we have been so far. And so if functionally it really was kind of an inside conversation, even if we're trying not to make it a broader conversation with the public. So I don't think that one was so bad, but I understand why people disagree with some decisions and why they worry that it's not just about disagreeing with the idea, but it's disagreeing with putting the idea out. Okay. But in the end, if we're going to come together and understand that any movement involves, you know, thousands and thousands of people, of activists, I mean, you know, tens of thousands, certainly, broadly speaking, but we there's lots of us, and we have lots of different ideas, and we're not going to agree about everything, and we have to be accepting and tolerant of each other.
Well,
do I feel like a preacher yet?
Yeah, but, you know, that's the kind of preaching we need to hear every once in a while. And, you know, in the academy, that's how we try to do it. We try to have a respectful, critical conversation where the best ideas stand on their merits, not because of louder shouting or better insults or boycotts or McCarthyism or, you know, Stalinist repression or anything like that. That's the theory, at least, although I guess I kind of got chased out of academia by way of a witch hunt, but it's not supposed to work that way. And, you know, I think focusing on the good ideas, letting the good ideas rise to the top without getting unduly hung up on bashing what you think are the bad ideas is a real kind of a fine line to walk. But, you know, we have no choice but to walk that line.
And I think that's a good way of putting it, too, not getting unduly hung up on bashing what you think are bad ideas. That, yes, you should critique what you think are bad ideas, but you don't have to get hung up on it.
Yeah, well, it's like a tar baby, you know. There's so many of these people who are just, like, stuck to these flame war tar babies, these email exchanges where they're just going on and ranting and raving and insulting and using foul language and because they're so excited about these bad ideas by somebody else that's, you know, supposedly seeking 9/11 truth, that they just have no time for anything productive. And I think that's the biggest problem is the time wasted. So, you know, focusing on using time well and using critical, careful, critical, calm arguments, David Ray Griffin is a model of that. And here we are at the end of the show already, and we haven't solved the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Richard, we're going to have to do it again sometime.
Okay.
Anytime. thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
Okay, take care, Richard.
All right, good luck with the
Thanks. I need it. Okay. Bye-bye. That was Richard Curtis, philosophy professor from Seattle, 9/11 truth supporter. You can find his biography on the terrific website, patriotsquestion911.com. Thank you to Robert, and thank you to Alex Jones for calling in. It's always great to hear from Alex. And thanks, everybody else. Sorry I didn't get to the couple of callers there. We'll try again next week. Actually, not next week. I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same channel, right here on We the People Radio Network. All the world is the truth.